Major K.H. Leith, Reel 1. Can you tell me if there was a history or tradition of military service in your family?
Yes, I think there was. You see, my father was born in 1850, and he was going to be a priest, and then he gave that up and he went into business. And quite successfully, I think, over the years. And then he joined the London Rangers, and he was with them for quite a long time. And while there, he became the colonel of the regiment. And he was too old to go into the First World War, but he was training troops. And so that is how my father began life. In due course, I think he was with a charger called Game Boy, as of course I remember. Then the charger went a bit wild and threw him off the horse, and he was injured forever after. So that is basically what it's all about. And I have three brothers and one sister, and I am the youngest in the family. I was born in 1915.
Did your father encourage you to think about going into the army when you were
Yes, a child? I was educated at Ample Force College in Yorkshire, and I was there for 6 or 7 years, I suppose, and started at the age of 12, having been put on a train at King's Cross, and came back in the train 12 or 13 weeks later on. Nobody ever came to see us up there, not until 80 years anyhow.
Did you undergo any sort of pre-military training while you were at Ampleforth?
Well, we had the OTC. I was quite keen on that. And I was in the school 8. And a matter of interest, I know it's a bit snobby, a friend of mine was the present Duke of Norfolk. And he was with me at the school 8. And we used to come down here to visit to shoot.
Can you remember what was on the syllabus of the training you did in the Corps at Ampleforth?
Well, yes. First of all, you learned, or no, we started off in B Squad under Sergeant Major, and every once a week, and you drill for 3 quarters of an hour. I think that was at least to keep us quiet, boys being what they were. And then one joined the OTC officially, and one started off in life from that. Parts of the rifle, and goodness knows what. So we knew a fair amount of that thing and drill. There was plenty of it. And I think I ended up as a really important person. I was a sergeant. I think Miles Howard, he was an under officer. I haven't had much contact with him ever since. But we do know each other vaguely. Well, this is all snobbing, of course.
Were you using a full-scale rifle, the Lee Enfield 303?
Well, yes, we started off they were only carbines started when we started off. They were sort of, I suppose, they came up from the Boer War. And then, of course, we had our proper rifles and bayonets.
Do you remember doing any tactical training?
Yes, we used to do tactical training, attacking the college. We used to be attached to York. And they used to send officers out there to look after us and give us lectures from time to time. That's how the tactical training we did.
Up to what level of tactics? Were you going to platoon level or company?
Well,
or
platoon in the defence or things of that nature. Section training and all that.
When you did platoon in the defence, can you remember how you actually did it, what you did?
Well, it's really difficult to remember. I suppose you had sort of positions where you dig a trench, etc., and that was about it.
Do you remember actually doing digging in?
And no, I don't think we actually ever did any digging there.
So it was theoretical?
It was more than theoretical, yes, and attacking the college, I think, for the whole direction.
Do you remember what sort of formation you would get into when you were doing an attack on the college?
Yes, well, no, there were various formations, arrowhead, extended line, in file, or, you know, all this. We probably did at Santos, as I tell you later on about that.
What was it that actually decided what formation you'd go into when making such a mock attack?
Well, I really can't remember. There was not a month of text. It was in a school that established us.
Did you go away for field days to proper training areas ever?
No, we didn't. We used to go down sometime. I remember going down at coal mine, and then we went to the RAF training place once to see these aeroplanes and went flying with them.
What did you make of that?
Oh, it was great fun. You know, I should remember the place. It's not. It's in Lincolnshire.
Cranwell?
That was the place, Cranwell. My father wouldn't let me fly, so he didn't approve of that sort of thing. And I had to watch them.
Do you know why he didn't approve of flying?
He was very old, you know, and things like that. And he was pretty old, having been born in 1850. He wasn't going to trust me flying.
Can you remember what point you made a firm intention to join the army?
Well, I can't say I'm at all brilliant or terribly clever, but I think when I got the idea of going into the army, and I'm really pleased I did with it, because one had a great life, and one then had to sit the army exam, so one had to study for the army at the college, and eventually took the army exam.
Can you remember anything about that?
Yes, quite a lot. Mm.
Tell me about that.
Well, first of all, one took the exam from school, and you had to do, as I remember, doing drawing and drawing this and doing that. And I had to draw a frame, I think. This is a frame for gardening, and a picture. We had to draw that, and all the other subjects. Having done that, one went to London, and of course one was given the medical exam. And from the medical exam, one was then pushed in front as a schoolboy in front of a board of officers. And they looked at you and asked me a lot of silly questions, and said whether you were the right person to have a commission. Apparently so I was all right, and so I managed to be accepted for the Sandhurst as I passed in September 34.
Can you remember what sort of questions the Board of Officers asked you?
I couldn't remember that, but I do recall that a friend of ours, or a relation of ours, went for a Board of Officers, and he was very, very intelligent indeed, and they said to him, this was about half a dozen admirals, and they said, now my boy, do you know the number of the taps you came in? Him being very bright, said, yes, of course I do. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's it. I can't remember what question they asked me. That was a standing joke in my family.
Do you remember if the medical was a thorough?
Oh, very thorough medical, you know, this, that, and the other, and totally cough at the right times.
Were you fit and healthy?
Yes, I was very fit and healthy. So they accepted me, but if there's anything wrong with you, of course they wouldn't have you in the army, because they'd have to pay you a pension as they pay me.
What happened when you got to Sandhurst? Tell me about that.
Well, I have got it all written out here for you, if you'd like me to read it.
Well, carry on then. Tell me what you remember. I might want to stop and ask you questions as we go along.
Well, I would say, without much fear and trepidation, I have been asked to record my military career as just a simple major, a regular officer in the service of the Crown. This is especially so when two of my daughters have married army officers, one a full colonel, and was an instructor of the Staff College, and the other a military attaché in Poland. Many great soldiers have passed through Woolwich and Sandhurst, so who am I to talk? Perhaps it may be of interest to know what it was like here at the RAA when I came as a cadet in September 1934. My first recollections was being taken from Ealing, my home, of many years in my family car, and getting out on the steps of the main building and being shown out to one's room. On the right of the college, to the right of as you look at the new building. I think it was four and five companies there, and 1 and 2 in the new building, so on and so forth. So a few of us were then marched down to Camden for measuring for our uniforms, boots, etc., etc. In due course, we were issued with a rifle, which was just kept in our rooms, nothing of security whatsoever.
When you say you were measured for your uniforms, does that mean you went into the town of Camberley to be measured?
Yes, we went down to flights, I think, and they measured you for all your various uniforms, which were quite considerable.
Was this a civilian tailor who was doing this?
It was just flights, I think it was, who did all the measuring.
So you didn't draw kit from quartermaster stores?
The only kit we drew, again, from the quartermaster stores until our uniform was ready was a Denim's. And before being issued with our uniform, we, the lowest of the low, junior, there were 3 terms in, we spent our time polishing our boots, etc., making the toe cap shine with every possible convenience, contrivance, and to be constantly inspected by several of our seniors. And as regards to rifles, that we issued, but these had to be polished. It was against all regulations to have any grease of any sort on your rifle. The rifles were known as hypes. They were stripped by the cadets, who really didn't know how to reassemble them. The hype, many a jerry, it was cracked after being soaked in paraffin and set alight. I recall.
Why did you do that? Why were you soaking things and setting them alight?
Because you weren't allowed to have any grease on your rifle at all.
So you were burning off.
You were burning off all the grease. And I went down to the armourer, and I gave him 2 and 6 or 5 shillings, and he French polished the butt of my rifle. I got pretty good marks for that. After the issue of uniform, namely collar, tie, a rough surgical type of uniform, riding equipment, flannel trousers, and a white round hat, which you wore on the top of your head, and a red and white striped blazer, a sports coat. And then also you were issued with a cycle, known in those days as a bombwheel, with a number painted clearly on the back. The cycle shed was just outside No. 4 building with a cycle mechanic in charge. Now, as regards education at Sandhurst, was designed for plenty of grip in military subjects, such as history of the First World War, history of the British Empire. The senior instructor then was a Mr. Cole, who wrote a booklet for the students. I had a copy of it until I lost it. Map reading, etc. Well, we were always kept busy. Horse riding was a must, 3 times or so a week, quite across. Equipment across your stirrups and jumping over the jumps and off the horses as well. Luckily, I'd had riding experience, so I knew my way about horses.
Where did you learn to ride?
My father used to take us down to farms in all around the countryside, 4, 5, or 6 of his holidays, I remember, and he always used to give me a horse. And so I used to ride a lot. There was a cavalry drill for riding the bicycles or mobiles. And the drill went something like this. When you moved around, you always had to move around in the squad. You were formed up in line, and they used to say, half sections right, quick march, prepare to mount, and off we went to the new buildings or wherever they had lectures. Now, we talked about the gym, which is, we had to do a lot of. As regards the gym, one was also supposed to go down voluntarily in the afternoons to pass one's tests for the passing out. Our chief instructor was a huge man, or a very small man, something like an ape, with muscles, arms, and a great size. I think his name was Jack White. We had to pass out with tests. After asking him many times to pass me out on a backward row, he used to say, the legs is bent. In due course, I was half passed out and met by Jock Martin and the friendly officer as I got round. Now, another interesting, in the gym, after discarding and doing PT, shorts and vests, etc. One was exercise in the gym officially under instructors. Afterwards, on lining up as a tension, there was a loud yell from Jock White and said, towels. Off came vests and shirts, then under the showers for redressing and both breathing off back to the various buildings we had to go to. May I add, on inspection by Edward, Edward VIII, then Prince of Wales, strictly in his guard's uniform, he came in and he went to see towels being performed. We met him then in a classroom when he visited us. And I was doing mechanical engineering. And special questions, of course, when the Prince of Wales arrived, questions had to be asked. And when he came into the room, the first thing I noticed, it sticks in my mind, what puffy eyes he had. Intermediates and juniors chose special subjects. French, wireless, mechanical engineering.
Was mechanical engineering your special subject?
I chose mechanical engineering.
Do you remember why you did that? Why it appealed to you?
We didn't know much about wireless. French I knew a little bit. And so I thought mechanical engineering would be more interesting because I could learn all about motor cars. There was a workshop in somewhere behind that, and there were lathes captured by, they were towed by it from Germans, I think, after the First World War. The last term of working, we learned about motor cars, which of course very strange beasts in those days. These were only just issued to units, I think, in 1936 when I joined.
Did you learn to drive while you were here at Sandhurst?
No, definitely not. I was taught to drive by my chauffeur, part-time by my father, and so I knew all about motor cars. But you weren't allowed to drive. It's the most extraordinary thing. You weren't allowed to drive at all. And if you wanted to do something or other, get a car for the day or get down there, you have to parade in front of your command, the company commander, and ask special permissions. Many other things followed, and not being skilled in matters, some were brought. We had to make a hole with a lathe and a file. We had to square things up and make it with a lathe, making a hole in the middle of the square. We had to file. These feasts of engineer were then showed to an instructor, who was an officer in charge, and he gave you marks. Then some of the clever people who knew about these things passed the gadget from person to person, and until they found out what we were up to, and one's initials had to be carved onto the object one was making.
How did you get on with doing that work, which is sort of craftsmanship, isn't it, that sort of work?
Well, it was quite interesting knowing how to do it, and I doing it ever afterwards, I found it very interesting because I knew a little about it. Of course, I was very keen on motor cars. Then another point here at Sandhurst, the Duke of Connaught. Now, the Duke of Connaught was, I think, was one of Queen Victoria's relations, and he used to live up here in one of the big houses. And on the passing out parade or before that, he was very old, and he used to stagger down the past all the cadets who were passing out in his uniform, guards of course, and after passing down there, everybody he passed down the ranks had to say, give him the regiment you were going into. Of course, being a guardsman, he used to stop and have a conversation with the person concerned. These were generally people who were going into the guards. In those days, passing out parades were not so well presented as they are today. In our second term, we had a new general. I can't remember his name because it was so long ago. He was more clued up about things. We were then formed into platoons under an officer. The new general knew all about everything, and we did shooting, and they couldn't understand, apparently, why people were shooting so badly. This was probably due to the trouble they'd had in taking the rifles to bits and cleaning them. Bullets on the range were going everywhere.
Had you done any shooting in the first term?
Not on the first term. You never saw it, except when you pulled your rifle to bits and put it in a jerry to get the oil off.
What about at Ampleforth in the Corps? Had you done
shooting
there?
Oh, yes, I did a lot of shooting there because I was in the school late and we used to come down here to visit.
So you were a good shot?
Yes. It was very useful for my honours there. Mm. Well, in those days, I suppose, we were possibly very class conscious. Only public school boys were given permissions, and cadets, known as A cadets, could come up through the ranks to the RMA. We held, all this happened in London, and as I've already described to you. In those days, no one was allowed to drive a car. This, I've said, they gave you the reason for this. I think they were rather frightened that people would have a car and see if they could drive down from London down to Sandhurst without stopping at the lifts. I think that's the reason people weren't allowed to drive cars.
Perhaps they were also worried about cadets going up to London for the evening and not coming back until the early hours of the morning.
One had to have a pass and one had to sign in as we came back. Yeah. I was very fortunate because I had a brother who was in the army and was living over at Aldershot.
What regiment was he in?
He was a sapper. He was very clever.
So he'd been to Woolwich?
He'd been to Woolwich, yeah. In those days, one studied the army list as regards future promotions. Some senior subalterns had 20 or 30 years even before they got made captain. They used to promote people by the regiment. So if you studied the army, you could go into a regiment with only a senior subaltern with only, say, 12 years service.
What was it that persuaded you to apply to the Suffolk Regiment?
Well, I suppose it affected me my whole life. The officer in charge of my platoon, his name, he used to be an instructor here, his name was Captain Maxwell, and I rather liked him, and I sort of applied to the Suffolk Regiment.
Because he was a Suffolk?
He was a Suffolk. Mm. And one went into the army those years, and they used to ask you, well, what is your private allowance? It was very important. Now, if you went into the Guards, or the Household Cavalry, one wanted at least 400 a year. And then they used to come down by regiments. And there's always a tale is one officer, cadet, was asked where he wanted to go, and some regiments were more popular than others. And he said, any regiment except the Beds and Hearts. The Beds and Hearts wasn't a very popular regiment. He was promptly posted into that particular regiment.
Why were they unpopular? Do you have any idea about that?
I hadn't just a clue. It was just passed out. The Beds and Hearts weren't the regiment to go into.
Did you need to have an allowance to survive in the Suffolks?
Yes, I was lucky. I had £50, I think, a year to survive in the Suffolks. I mean, a mess bill was... Well, I suppose if one didn't drink, they must have always cost you £8, and your only poor were given £15 a month, and there's a second lieutenant. So one needed something to support oneself, which is my whole life, as far as where I was posted down to Plymouth, started from there. Then, if one posted to India, one was given double rates of pay.
So that was very convenient financially.
And we went up to £30 a month, the second attempt.
I'd like to ask you a bit more about the time at Sandhurst, if you can remember about it. You mentioned studying the history of the First World War.
Yes.
Can you remember anything of what they told you about the First World War during those lectures?
Yes, they had in the grounds here, as a matter of interest, they had some trenches made like the First World War trenches. Well, that was interesting. We looked at those, etc. And we studied the campaigns as a whole, and then we studied the Wavell campaigns, General Wavell. He'd written a book on it, and so we studied those. And everyone had to give lectures about it. We were told to give a lecture on this, that, and the other. That's how it sort of operated. And as I say, a person like yourself was Mr. Cole, who was the chief instructor there, and he'd written a book, especially on the British Empire.
And how was this instruction normally delivered? Was it done by formal lecture?
Or? It was done by formal lectures, and then cadets had to go up and say, give a lecture on some special subject.
Do you remember what yours was on?
I some campaign in the First World War, we had to mug up a lecture for about 10 minutes. And of course, then they could comment on it if you could give a lecture. And I suppose that was behind it.
You haven't mentioned doing any tactical training.
We didn't do it very much, but we used to go out in due course. We were taken out onto the moors at the other side of Sandhurst, and we did a little tactical training, much the same as we did this when I was in the OTC. A line, in line, file, double marks, etc. Next to nothing at all. So when one joined one regiment, one hadn't a damn clue about things. If I hadn't been in the OTC, I would have been absolutely stumped.
What sort of weapons had you been trained on in your weapon training?
Oh, just a rifle.
Just a rifle?
Just a rifle. And they went in. I think we had been trained at Ampleforth. I think we had a Lewis gun there, which we were trained a bit in that, taking it to bits and things. And then, of course, when young ones regiment, that's what they were equipped with. They had a machine. When you were a joined regiment, when there's a rifle section, rifle companies, and a machine gun company.
And they had Lewis guns when you joined?
They had Lewis guns if one had to take bits.
Now, you also mentioned the gym. Did you have PT every day? Was this daily occurrence?
Well, a few days, yes. Yeah. And we had to go down and pass the various tests.
You mentioned, failing the backward roll because you bent your legs.
My legs is bent.
What other exercises did you have to do?
Horses, backward rolls, everything conceivable thing, and handstands and all that. Tiny rope, all in the gym.
What was the emphasis on? Was it on strength or on endurance or on agility? Do you have an idea about
agility,
that?
That was the whole idea. So some people were also sent off on runs.
What sort of distances would you have to go on a run?
A couple of miles, 3 miles or something. Having to run around the outside place.
Was there a great emphasis on games?
There wasn't really. There was no emphasis on them at all. I didn't really play anything. I was very fortunate. I had my brother living downtown. I was going to see him every week. Mm. He went in due course, went off to Egypt.
Had you played games at Ampleforth?
Well, yes, we played regular at Ampleforth. Tennis, cricket, and things like that.
But there was less of that here than there had been at Ampleforth.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And when we used to play cricket, and losing at Ampleforth, when we were in Paris or something, one little boy climbed up to one of these big things they had with a cricket pitch, about 10, 15 feet high.
Sight screen.
And when he got up there, he pretended he couldn't get down. Another silly little lame master climbed up to get him down. Having got to climb up the top, this boy jumped off. He popped down. Certainly, I should laugh in despondency. So that was all about it, as I can remember, the guy's sentence. The military training followed.
So Sandhurst was not really a military training, from what you've been saying. It was a preliminary training at that time.
Well, it was more of an educational training, I suppose. Mm. And we hadn't a clue of them. We had to clean boots and things like that, but it was basically educational.
Well, What about the social side of life at Sandhurst? Was there organized?
We had balls from time to time, and that was not exciting. I didn't have any girlfriends in those days, and I was nearly loaded without some boy, I remember.